Good morning. All right. So, as Dr. Friedman had shared with you, this was a very large survey, and I have the privilege to present on behalf of a big team some of the findings that we have finished our analyses on. Similar to Dr. Friedman, I have no disclosures. And as was mentioned a little bit earlier, this was a convenient sample of community health clinics across 7 states. And we completed the survey, closed it, because it was an online survey, and we closed the survey on May 30th, 2013. In total, we had a total of 327 providers, nurses, medical assistants, as well as quality improvement and operations staff who completed the survey. We were very interested in colorectal cancer screening because when we started seeking input from our partnership committee members that included representatives from HRSA, from the Bureau of Primary Health Care, as well as the National Association of Community Health Centers and our local primary care associations, they indicated that colorectal cancer screening was very important to them, as in 2012 they needed to start reporting this as one of their measures. So in our survey, we inquired about colonoscopy. We were also interested about the fecal occult blood tests that they provided to patients to conduct at home. Some sites were also had moved on to fecal immunochemical tests. And of course, we still inquired about sigmoidoscopy because that remains one of the modalities that is still recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So you can see here on this slide that a majority of the survey respondents indicated that the primary modality that was used at their clinic were the at-home tests of FOBT and FITS. I'm going to just talk a little bit today about some of the findings from our clinic characteristic survey, because when we developed this, the two surveys, we felt that it was important to get some important background information about the sites that the staff members who were completing the survey had to work in. And what we did hear about was that, again, you know, staffing tends to be somewhat challenging in these work environments. So we inquired about FTEs of the providers, as well as whether they were experiencing any shortages. And very front and prominent in primary care across the country is this whole issue about electronic health records. So I'm going to share some information on that too. And more importantly, not only just about the adoption of electronic health records, but again, the ease to generate information, and also how accurate, you know, is the information that they're able to generate. So some of the information regarding these clinics that the staff members participated in our survey worked in, you can see that they ranged from pretty small clinics to relatively large sites that served over 30,000 patients. The community health centers, some were quite small with one or two clinics, and then we also had ones which were quite large with over 10 clinics amongst their health center. There are, again, as we expected, a significant proportion of patients who were uninsured, and of course also patients who had limited English proficiency. And you'll see our clinic characteristics survey was actually completed by a variety of leaders at the community health centers, all the way from CEOs, CMOs, medical directors, chief nursing operators, chief nursing officers, chief operations officers, et cetera. And as Daniela mentioned, we contacted one individual who had the opportunity to then tap into their staff members to help them complete the survey. So I wanted to share this first because, as we are aware, the literature does indicate that there is staffing challenges in these community health centers. And among the respondents of our survey, clinic characteristics survey, they indicated that over 50% of our respondents experienced, you know, staffing shortages of their providers. Similarly, they not quite as large a percent, but still both nurses and medical assistants were also in shortage as well. And we kind of understood some of these background information when we developed our survey, and that was why this our group ended up choosing this practice change and development model, because we felt that this whole issue of capacity and capability for development would be very important if we wanted to bring about change. And while we recognize that in order to really influence change, that there are still inside motivators, outside motivators, as well as options for development, and of course they interact, that we had to limit our survey, ideally to 20 minutes, so we ended up choosing and focusing on this domain of capability for development. And within this capability for development domain, it encompasses practice core constructs, this construct of adaptive reserve, and then there is also this attentiveness to the local environment. And what is represented in this domain is that when you have a robust practice core, that a practice can then consistently deliver reliable primary care. And within the practice core, you'll see that finances is important, a good management model, space and facilities, of course, is also important, the skills, equipment, et cetera. However, a practice core is not complete, and within it, you have the staff members who have to work in this environment, and that's where the whole construct of the practice adaptive reserve really impressed upon us as something that we should explore some more. And there has been quite a bit of research done on the practice adaptive reserve, primarily by the group led by Kurt Stange at Case Western Reserve. And they had conducted a large national study with 36 general primary care practices where they included measurements on the practice adaptive reserve. And what they found is that, again, if you have practice adaptive reserve, this tends to enhance resilience as well as to facilitate adaptation and development in the practice setting. And you'll see on this slide that practice adaptive reserve centers around seven characteristics. That's in the middle of the slide of these elements of mindfulness, trust, diversity, respect, being heedful. And that when you have these seven characteristics, they tend to promote action and reflection among the staff members in the practice, which under a learning culture as well as a facilitative leadership then promotes sense-making by the team who can then work more effectively with efficient and effective teamwork so that you can then again bring about change. And we were very fortunate in that because the National Demonstration Project had developed this, not only this model of the practice adaptive reserve, but also a scale, we included the scale in our survey. And what we found was among the seven states that participated in our survey, that the practice adaptive reserve, you know, ranged somewhat, but really, you know, it looked quite good among the clinics that participated in our survey. And combined, it was a scale of points, the score was 0.66, and the scale ranges from 0 to 1, with 1 representing high adaptive reserve. And just to provide some reference, in the National Demonstration Project, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, that included very highly motivated practices with significant capability for change, at baseline, their practice adaptive score was 0.69. So we were quite impressed that the community health center clinics that we worked with scored quite well. We were also interested, of course, regarding colorectal cancer screening. And as you may be aware, the patient-centered medical home is, again, trying to be implemented across the country in primary care settings. And we felt that it would be important to base our survey in a manner that is not only relevant, but hopefully useful to the clinics that we had collaborated with. So we developed these 8 best practices for colorectal cancer screening based on the National Committee for Quality Assurance, the NCQA standards for primary care patient-centered medical homes. And what we developed were to ask questions about whether the practices, the providers, the clinic staff members that we were surveying, whether they participated in daily huddles, whether they had other mechanisms to ensure that communication is efficient regarding colorectal cancer screening. We also were curious whether they had standing orders, because there is this movement to try to shift tasks away from the providers so that more activities can be successfully completed in the primary care setting. Of course, tracking of patients is also important, whether they had gotten the screening orders, whether the patients completed the screening, and then whether, of course, any abnormal test results are being followed up and patients referred accordingly. We had also heard in our individual work that some community health center clinics may not have easy access to specialists and referral to specialists, so we felt that it was important to also include that information in our survey. And as you can see here, again, you know, a significant proportion of the survey respondents indicated that they did not have some of these, they did not participate in some of these best practices.
Sorry, just to clarify, 2008 or
2011? 2011. Thank you for that question. So, of course, we were then very, very curious to see whether clinics that had higher levels of practice adaptive reserve may perform better with respect to the colorectal cancer screening best practices. And one way that we conducted our analysis was to see whether respondents that performed the patient-centered medical home best practices usually or always, how they scored compared to you know, a lower score as opposed to a higher score, and then the practice adaptive reserve level. And as you'll see on this slide, when the practice adaptive level was reported to be quite low, ranging from 0 to less than 0.6, a smaller proportion of the respondents actually responded that they usually or always performed the best practice. And there is kind of a very nice dose response here, where when the practice adaptive reserve score was higher, almost 60% of them reported that they usually or always performed the colorectal cancer screening best practice. We then performed regression analysis to better understand whether, again, this positive association seems to be again, true. And what we did was we created a composite score of the best practices. And as you may recall, we had 8 best practices, and it ranged from 0 to 4 as potential scores. And so the total score that could be the highest was 32, with 0 representing none, and then 32 as they would perform all all 8 always. So again, what we found was that the composite score mean would be higher, and we found the association, again, kind of a nice dose response again, with the higher practice adaptive reserve being positively associated with a higher best practice composite score. And this was statistically significant. Then when we looked at the best practices in a dichotomized fashion, where the respondents usually or always perform the best practice being 6 to 8 versus 0 to 5, which was never going all the way up to less than usually, again, the odds ratio showed that the higher practice adaptive reserve had a odds ratio of 5.49, which was, again, statistically significant. And we saw, again, a really nice dose response here, too. And as you can see here, we adjusted for state, for age, job type, the years that the respondent had worked at the clinic, as well as the hours that they worked each week. So we were very excited with those results, but we also felt that it was important for us to get a better understanding regarding some issues that were very pertinent to our community partners, and this is, again, electronic health records. So it was not surprising that about 90% of the participants had adopted electronic health records. But we wanted to delve a little bit more into electronic health records and conducted an analysis looking at their functionality and whether the clinic used the electronic health record to create lists of patient panels for providers, whether they could identify patients who were overdue for colorectal cancer screening, whether they were able to send reminders to patients, and also how easy it was for them to estimate colorectal cancer screening rates. And as you can see on the right column, that the clinics that indicated they could use their electronic health records easily to do these four activities was actually quite low. And more worrisome is this whole issue about accuracy. Again, you know, only, 24% indicated that the information they could pull from their electronic health records was very accurate and that they would rely on it as a primary source for reports and patient care decision. 69% indicated that they would need a secondary audit or cross-check the information with additional information in order to use it for reports or patient care decision, and 6.7% said they would not use their electronic health records at all. So in summary, again, this was a very large-scale, multi-state survey of colorectal cancer screening and patient-centered medical home best practices. Our partner clinics had significant staffing shortages, and we were excited to find that there were positive associations between the practice adaptive reserve as well as the patient-centered medical home colorectal cancer screening best practices. We also found that, again, there are significant limitations regarding the electronic health record data with respect to functionality as well as accuracy. So I would like to acknowledge and thank our large work group team, the statisticians Alan Kanuki, Latonya Coombs, Dr. Jim Hotz from the National Association for Community Health Centers, as well as the National Colorectal Cancer Roundtable, Kathleen Clark from our Washington State Primary Care Association, all our community health center contacts, as well as the survey respondents. And my contact information is at the bottom of the slide. Thank you.